Hi, this is Annie Spong. Welcome to Romancing the Screen. So excited for you to hear this next podcast with my dear friends and colleagues, Amy and Richard Janes. Dynamic people, filmmakers, writers, directors, producers, creators of all kinds. I am just so in awe of the depth and breadth of their work. They started a filmmaker's ranch in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, about 4 years ago, and have done just amazing things there. They are Emmy Award winners, Clio Award winners. The list of accomplishments and spaces in the industry they have touched is just too numerous to name. I really hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did hosting them, and we look forward to hearing your feedback. Okay, enjoy the pod. Welcome to Romancing the Screen, bearing it all with intimacy coordinators, actors, and crew. Today we have some beautiful humans, filmmakers, in huge capacity from writer, director, editor, doc maker, creating film studios. Just these are dear, dear friends of mine, and I have watched them expand and explode into their creativity. And I'm so grateful that Richard and Amy Janes are with us to talk about their understanding and their experience with and around intimacy coordinating and how that has affected their filmmaking. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having us, Annie. Speaking of amazing people, look what you guys are doing. I remember when this was just an idea, and here we are sitting down, and it's actually making a huge impact on the world. So thank you.
Wonderful. So either of you have experience being in an intimate scene in your lifetime?
So I started out as a child actor. So it's interesting when you think about intimate scenes and what immediately comes to mind, because what didn't come to mind was immediately I was sort of, no, not really, not as an actor, as a director, yes, but was that really intimate? And then you go, actually, I've had to kiss people on the stage. I've had to run across the stage in boxer shorts. When I was 15, I was offered a part at the National Theater in a play called Spring Awakenings, which is a play all about sexual awakenings for teenagers. It's quite adult content. And for the little Catholic boy brought up who was worried about even being seen in Speedos, that scared the living daylights out of me. And at the same time, I didn't go to, in England, all the young kids go to acting schools, right? Apart from a select few. And I was one of the few that went to a normal school. And in my town, there was another young man who went, who was the same age as me, perhaps a year older. And he was in a show. And I remember seeing him when I was 15. And he said, "You never guess what just happened. I got onto set on this show and I had this scene in a bedroom with this girl." And he was, he was 16 at the time. And they said, "Right, if you could just jump out of bed, and when you hear your mom come downstairs, you're going to run across the room naked and we're going to see your bottom." Okay, guys, here we go. That scared me to death that I would be put in that situation, that effectively it put a line under my career as being an actor. It scared me so much. Now, later on, I was 22 when I directed my first feature film, and I had an experience where I had a lovemaking scene at the very beginning of the movie, set in 1912 Sicily, and it was two Italian actors, and it was very, very different then from the scene that we had halfway through the movie with two British actors. And the two British actors we shot first in London. And there was a conversation about what are we doing? How are we doing this? there was no such thing. This was 20 years ago. There was no such thing as an intimacy coordinator. So we had a basic conversation. You're going to come through. You're going to start kissing. You're going to fall down. You're going to fall out of camera, but we want it to be really passionate. Okay, let's just go. But the whole thing was, you know, you could hear, let's get chewing gum and let's get, have you got any chewing gum? And have you got mouth spray and all this sort of stuff? And very conscious. And the whole crew in England are very, we're not known for being too open with our sort of intimacy, as it were. We go down to Italy, and first of all, we scheduled this love scene after lunch, which I realized was absolutely the wrong thing to do. We should do it before lunch. But we get onto set, and we haven't had this discussion yet. And the first thing the two Italian actors do is get all their kit off and jump into bed. And the feeling from the crew was, oh my goodness. And all the crew turned away, and they couldn't deal with it, British crew. And I went up and I said, look, you know, you don't have to be completely naked under the sheets. And they said, no, we want to be. This is fine. This is absolutely fine. And they just, what I then realized was that at lunch, they'd all gone into the kitchen and they were eating the rawest onions and garlic and what have you, completely opposite to the British actors, because they thought this was fun. And they had this complete freedom as artists to do whatever they wanted to do in a way that I was brought up being incredibly nervous about it. So my first experience directing was this two-sided thing, one where I felt that an intimacy coordinator, had I known at all what it was at that point, would have been phenomenal. And as me as an actor when I was younger, it would have been great to know that I had that to lean on, where I could understand what I was entering into. And then on the other side, the freedom of these actors, which as a director was a gorgeous thing to work with, because they were completely willing just to go wherever they wanted to go. And I think that was a very rare experience, but it was a remarkable experience to be in, because they felt so comfortable in their own bodies and what they were doing and the environment that they were in. And I don't know how you achieve that on a set ever again. It was a remarkable experience. But I think there was, from an actor standpoint and a director standpoint, I've seen the need for intimacy coordinators in a massive way. So it's really great to see this coming to the forefront.
Right. How beautiful. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if I could add, Richard, one of your very first commercials, you had to kiss a woman who was a foot and a half taller than you, and they put you on an apple box. And I bring this all up because one of Richard's, to this day, biggest fears or biggest nightmares would be waking up naked on a stage with a crew of people that he doesn't know standing there. And I think, just to put like that exclamation on the story he just shared, had there been an intimacy coordinator working with a 14, 15-year-old boy, there may have been an opportunity for him to not only be able to feel more confident in his own body, but to not have pulled himself out of the game. We were just having dinner with an actor, a British actor, who's working on a film here in Oklahoma, who they were talking about it. And during that conversation, Richard said, you know, I really believe that's one of the reasons I pulled myself out of acting, was because I knew I could never do that. I could never present myself naked because of the vulnerability. And I believe that with this role that you all are working, it's going to allow a group of individuals who may otherwise just shut the door on acting an opportunity to grow themselves with their own comfort level, but also continue to participate, because you know, to remove yourself because you feel insecure, make anything happen.
This, and thank you, Richard and Amy, so much for sharing your experience, because this completely speaks to exactly what our purpose and our goal is. You know, in your first situation, Richard, being a young adolescent and hearing from another cast member who is also an adolescent of what might happen or what was going to happen, is a terrifying way to find out what is in store for you. And the what our mind does with not having transparency of vision and the ability to ask questions and consent creates a space where you're like, I'm out, because I don't know, there's no container for me to know where I'm safe.
safe to be creative, safe to express what the expectations are, even the ability to process, like, okay, am I comfortable with this at all? And does this, what it, I'm hearing is the vision of this, actually add to the story we're telling? You know, there's several layers of questions that as an intimacy coordinator, we get to add to the equation as an advocate for an actor.
I love that. It's one of the conversations we had the other evening with this successful actor who's in town on this movie. He said most of the time it's not called for. Now, I had a different sort of feeling, and I think probably my feeling is this repressed sort of side of wanting to feel as if I could be in a safe enough place to be that full exposed artist. And exposed, I'm talking about, you know, exposing myself as a human being, not just the body, but as a human being. And I remember I did a thing at Pinewood Studios, one of the last things I did. And, you know, Pinewood's this great old building and I'm there and everyone's in a rush. And so I got put into my room and the costume designer's there. And she's this lady in her 60s who's done all these period costumes. And she said, there's your costume. And I said, oh, great. And I waited for her to leave the room. And she just looked at me. She said, darling, I've seen it all. There is nothing I'm interested in. And we're in a hurry. Get your kit off and get the clothes on. We're fine. I'm not looking. And in that moment, I was sort of, oh, you know what? Yeah, perhaps people aren't looking at me. But then you hear those horror stories of being on set. And I think, you know, as a man, there's being judged. And then there's the woman, which I think goes even more berserk, where you hear the stories of all the electricians coming up on the rafters of the studio and looking down over the top and seeing everything that's going on and the catcalling and the difficulty of that. We can only be artists, and I think a lot of people don't give actors the credit that they deserve. For a true actor, a true artist has to be so vulnerable with everything they do. But you can only be vulnerable, whether it's on stage, on a camera, or in a personal relationship, if you feel safe. And that speaks to what you were talking about there, which is having that conversation. How do you set up? And I don't know, I have a visceral reaction to the word boundaries. And perhaps that's my luxury that I can say that. But it's more for me about removing boundaries so that I can be safe, so that I can feel safe, so that I can embrace fully a character.
Exactly. When we have a container of consent, you get to be free to move about as you wish, which actually creates more creativity because you're not white knuckling it, wondering when someone's going to say, take them off, take everything off, let's go. You actually know what the process is going to be, and there's going to be some advocacy if it's different from the container we set up.
I just think that's the most important thing. Sorry, just really quickly, because jumping on Richard's. I actually think the most important thing that you are all alluding to at this point, and what Richard lacked when he was a child, mm-hmm. is the ability to say no.
Correct.
And that is the number one safety net that anybody has in their lives, is that ability to say, I'm not okay with this. What's another option? And so that, I believe, is the gift that the intimacy coordinator now brings to every set that he or she arrives at, allowing vulnerability and allowing people to stretch. Richard needed to stretch. He still does. One day we're going to get him out there naked on a stage, I swear to God, because he's going to see that it's not what it is in his head either, maybe, you know?
Well, and that's the thing. That's a big thing that, you know, we as a community, and Catherine, I'm sure you can jump in on this as well, talk about. Unless there is the space for a solid no with no explanation, there is no yes. So there cannot be, and we as a culture have a difficult relationship with no being okay. And like you pointed to, Richard, being a boundary, you know, especially in a field where I'm hired, You know, that is just such a space that we really want to advocate for.
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to jump in, and hello, it's so good to see you guys again. I know Rachel is so sad that they can't be here today, but I am so glad I get to hang out with you guys for a minute. But I wanted to jump back on something that Richard said earlier, which was about him talking to a friend who was like, nudity is almost never called for, which is, I think, like a rising opinion. I think there's like a certain backlash currently to the concept of nudity and sex on screen. And I wanted to kind of offer a perspective on that, which is, I think nudity especially is a tool and like a flavor in storytelling. And I think that's something that directors and writers can think about how to use it. Because if you know, like I was just taught, a writer was just asking me a question on a show I was working on to be like, how do I write a scene with a child in a bathtub where we don't see anything? And I was like, well, that's like not enough information. Why are we seeing the child in the bathtub, even though like covered? Like, is this about the innocence of childhood? Is this like, I believe the kid at some point gets murdered. I was like, is this like a scary, like the vulnerability? Because like, that's a different shot. Like, is it a freaky, like, oh, this kid is so scared, like so vulnerable? Or is it like, oh, this child is so innocent? Like, what story is the nudity telling? Or in this case, the like implied nudity. And if you know what story the nudity is telling, then you can actually work around it. You can work around anyone's boundaries if every actor is on the same page, if every member of the team is like, oh, this is the story the nudity or the implied nudity is telling. We all know what we're working toward. Because I do think that nudity can be a beautiful storytelling tool if it's being used as that.
Absolutely. I have to agree with that. I think when we were, again, speaking to this gentleman, well, okay, so bring it back, because he was saying, why are we doing it? And we brought up Hitchcock, and some of the best scary stuff is Hitchcock figured out how to do without showing us anything. And it's allowing the mind to also be able to participate in the reality or altered reality that you're in. Now, I have not seen this movie yet, but I have to bring up Saltburn. It is blowing up out here in a very positive and a very, very, very negative way. The devil made Saltburn, is what we're being told out here. Dead serious. Richard, you saw that. You saw it, and Ella saw it twice, and absolutely adores that. Ella is our 17-year-old filmmaker, and loved it to pieces. How, what, where, when? Tell me. I'm just curious your thought in reference to what we're speaking about today.
I was in a movie theater. It was probably had 60 people in. I was probably one of the very few males. Most of the audience were under the age of 25 female, who have these little tittering of laughter. I could tell the people who'd seen it already, because you could feel their excitement coming up when he goes with the bathtub scene, which I'm not going to ruin for you, but it's brilliant. And it's beautiful, and it's just, it's extremely intimate. You don't see anything, but it's extremely intimate in terms of when you look at intimacy, you've got the intimacy that you're seeing on screen, but also the implied intimacy as well that you're going to have with the audience in that moment. And then you have the scene at the very end, and that's the scene probably that would have stopped me being an actor, because the bravery of him doing what he did at the end. It's interesting. Sitting there in that audience, I felt a little sad at the end of it. And the reason why I felt sad was because I was in an audience full of young ladies who were giggling, and it caused a reaction to this, the nudity on screen, Christian far-right friends in Oklahoma here might say, the deviance that is portrayed on screen. And yet I've sat in movies that are guns and blood and blowing people up, with people bringing their six-year-old children into the movie theater. And no one has had that same reaction of, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, or this is dreadful, this is the devil's work. And I can't help but think that nudity and nakedness is all part of being human, and it is beautiful. And the idea that we don't need it in entertainment, I think, is in a way, I can't help but feel, is that not moving away from the idea of surely we should be comfortable with our bodies. We should be expressive with our bodies. And I think society has put us in a position where we're not. I was born naked. I wasn't born with clothes on, right? And so in essence, it should be the most natural thing in the world for me to feel comfortable being naked, being in a scene where I'm hugging another person, being in a scene where I'm dancing around with my man dancing around with me as I spin around, right? All of that sort of stuff. And yet we're fine with all the guns and the violence and blowing people up and knives and all that, but we're not fine with the intimacy. And the other thing that I'd say to that, which, and I thought it was a great, great movie, and I was really excited by it. And you know, it's like you look at Eyes Wide Shut, and that's another movie that you see such a lot of people can have a lot of trouble with that, and yet they would watch Michael Mann's Heat and they wouldn't have a problem with that. And you go, this is nuts. What's happened to the world? But Annie, or Catherine, I think one of you said the idea of saying no. As a director, the idea of saying no at any point also scares me, because I've experienced actors just saying no. And I don't mean for intimacy. I mean just no. I'm not coming out of the trailer. No, I am not going to do this. I have one actress that challenged me with every single bit of note that I gave her. Let's have it with the coffee cup. That'd be great, because then we get the steam coming out of it. Why? Oh, well, let's not do it with the coffee cup. Why? No, I'm not doing that. And it's sort of, well, you can't have no, you're not having the coffee cup, and no, you are having the coffee cup. What are we doing here? They just like that challenge. And my concern would be, okay, I go and make a movie like Saltburn. Did it need the nudity in it? Actually, there wasn't that much nudity, but it was extremely intimate. What if the actor got halfway through that and went, actually, you know what? No, I'm not comfortable with this. Thanks anyway. What do we do? Do we change the script? Or do we change the actor and go back and reshoot it all? And I think that's one of the areas where obviously there has to be a strong enough conversation beforehand, but at some point we've all got to commit to what's happening. How do you stop that from someone just changing their mind halfway through a movie that is explicitly about exploring sexual awakenings and intimacy?
I think that's such a great question to ponder. A, there are a couple things that you said. One is, as we get further into the regularity of intimacy coordinating, we're really going to begin to continue to flesh out what is intimacy, you know, because that definition is very fuzzy for everyone. What is it? How does it occur? Is it something practical? Is it something, you know, that's just implied? And then two, like, as you're moving through a project, when there is someone who was consensual for the activities, meaning the consent box that we talked about and the parameters of that had been agreed to, and then there becomes some where along the line, a no, that would be hopefully me being, or an intimacy coordinator being willing to be present to read the room and see that what the energetic is, what shifted. Is there something, maybe there's something happening within the crew that feels unacceptable to the actor. Maybe we don't have a closed set. Maybe we're not creating the parameters of a consent space that's comfortable, and being willing to like have those conversations and go back in. Or is it something like, did the storyline change? Or is it a matter of how we're shooting this intimate scene? Or have we discussed enough what the choreography is within the scene and the actors together? Is it a way of being touched that they're not appreciating? Or, you know, so there's lots of different nuances that need to be addressed within somebody saying no. And then clearly maybe they've changed their mind. Maybe they had some memory of trauma that's surfacing. And that's an unexpected and also a very real thing that you get to shift the direction. So then it would be you know, coming back as an intimacy coordinating and say, hey, Richard, there's something that surfaced and I'm wondering if we can explore perhaps shooting this a different way without seeing full nudity or without, you know, whatever the boundary is. And that as creative beings, we get to be able to like, okay, ponder, how do we do this? Can we do it?
I completely agree. And I think that does go a little bit back to what I was trying to say earlier, which is if we all know what the intent of the scene is, then the actor and the director and the intimacy coordinator can all work toward it. Because I think I have mostly worked in television. And of course, television is different from movies in that actors sign on to roles and for years sometimes and have, you know, just a pilot script. And I have worked on shows where it is the intent of the show is specifically very sexual and an actor after a season feels uncomfortable. And that often comes, and I feel like how you address it comes from where the discomfort is coming. Is it coming because they feel like a showrunner or a director has not been respectful to them? Does it come because they're uncomfortable with a specific actor who's written as their love interest? Does it come from like a body place, which sometimes happened to being like, I have gained weight or I don't look the way I did when I got hired for this role. And now I'm very, very worried about putting myself on screen. You know, does it come as has happened sometimes? Does it come from a place of trying to hide a pregnancy that they don't want the showrunner to know about? Like there's so many different reasons why an actor who formerly was very comfortable with nudity might suddenly change. And I think there's no one fix. It's just like seeing what the situation is and then knowing, okay, like for the Saltburn scene, I feel like that scene, the nudity was about sort of like, in a fucked up way, like freedom and joy. So being like, if there's a specific thing we don't want to see, how are we still getting that like gorgeous emotional moment across while honoring the actors like boundaries and the director's visions? Like it's always about, to me, it is a no. And it's about respecting the no, but it's about hearing the no and then being like, okay, so what's the and? What's the switch? What's the creative? I think there's creativity in boundaries sometimes, you know, like it can, that's the thing that can actually inspire the thing that really works.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Look at the 1950s films. Some of the best films ever.
100%. 100%. Well, I love this, but I'm going to go back a little bit to what Richard shared before about being a director. You know, and being a director in a space where you had very differing cultural perspectives. You know, you had a crew that was British, was way more conservative. And then you had these actors that were Italian and much freer with their sexuality and their physical beings, etc. But also in a space where there was not transparency with the crew about what was about to happen. So you had this reaction about crew not feeling safe. And I think that that's one thing that as intimacy coordinators, a lot of people don't understand, that we're here to advocate for the crew and to make sure that we are transparent with the crew. Like today, this is what we're shooting. If this is traumatic for you or you do not want to be present, please remove yourself. You know, so there's a space for people to consent with that as well. And the other thing I just want to touch on, just because I come from costume design world, that costume designer should have read the room and allowed you space to take care of changing your bodies, your clothes, without being observed. You know, that was a moment of consent also. That is something from like the old school of like, just do it because I said so. And as an actor, you know, you have to be able to say, can you give me a moment, you know, and step out. I can change my clothes without you watching me. You know, that is a really important piece of this as well.
It's fascinating when you look at it from the societal side and how different people were brought up. Look, as a director, I'm constantly dealing with actors who have different ways of working. And that's one of the joys about directing, right? Is how do I get how do I get this one actor who has to feel everything and this other actor who has to feel nothing, but both of them can deliver great performances, to create a scene together that works beautifully? And how do I adjust to giving them notes? I think in a way, every good scene in the movie is intimate. You asked earlier on, what is intimacy? Whether it's two people sitting down at a table, looking at each other in the eyes and talking about, I don't know, the value of this pen, it can be extremely intimate. And I think that's something that, you know, not to harp on, but our society has got further and further away from intimacy. Often we feel awkward if we're sitting somewhere and someone's looking in our eyes for too long, right? We want to break that eye contact because it's just too intimate.
God forbid you should try to breastfeed your child in public.
Right?
Don't do that, Amy.
Nope. I do that on purpose. In fact, one time I did it by accident after I was introduced to somebody and my boob was hanging straight out and I'm talking to this gentleman after I had just nursed Ella, not having any idea my boob's hanging out. But I'm on the opposite spectrum of Richard.
Yeah.
I grew up swimming. We were naked all the freaking time in locker rooms. And I don't know, for better or for worse, but you know, boobs are great, man. Everybody's got nipples.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
But I think the idea of the crew being involved is really important. And I think that's something, look, I've been on an enormous amount of sets, whether it is as an actor, a director, a producer, a facility owner. And there are some sets you go on where the crew are completely checked out. You could ask them what the story was about. They'd have no idea whatsoever. You could ask them what scene they were doing, and they'd have a basic idea based on what they would do, their contribution was, but that would be it. They don't care. And then you have scenes where you have sets that you go on, and it's just, for me as a director, it's magic because everyone understands what they're trying to do, what they're trying to create, and their involvement in that. And again, I think that can be quite intimate. The movie that Amy and I have just produced, because Filmmakers Ranch, which we're in here, is a 12-acre campus, and we've got three sound stages. We work with other films coming into the state where they'll come in and they'll use our standing sets, police station, hospital, high school, bar. They'll build sets, and then we produce our own stuff. So we've just produced a movie called Cricket. And the story is about a young girl finding her voice. And she's finding her voice at a time of turmoil for the family. And so the family are going through a situation where mom has been diagnosed with cancer. And we're in a situation, and I can share it because the actress is very public with this. Her sister had just gone through cancer. And she rang the bell 2 months prior to a shooting. And what I hadn't realized fully, I understood how prevalent cancer was. My grandmother died of cancer. I've had other people die of cancer around me that aren't immediate family members. What I hadn't realized was how many of the crew over the 5 weeks of shooting would come up to me and said, hey, yeah, we went through this with my mom. We went through this with my dad. And halfway through, Amy and I realized, oh my goodness, we knew we were dealing with something that was extremely close, and I would argue intimate for a lot of people, and brought up a lot of baggage. And so we said to everyone, look, anyone who wants to go through therapy, let us know through this process. We had a particularly tough scene coming up. Now, I'm an Englishman. I don't cry, right? I wish I could cry more, but I don't. We went into the... yes, there we go. I'm working on it. Thank you, Annie.
Yeah, just give me a few more years, Annie. Give me a few more years.
Look, by next year, you're going to be crying. The Christmas tree is going to look haphazard. It's all
exactly. And goodness gracious, crying on stage naked, that'll be it.
Wrapped in Christmas lights.
But the scene involved the going in for the big scan. And so you go into this room in a cancer hospital, and I had this wave of emotion come over me because suddenly I felt the hopes and dreams of thousands of people going through this room and getting scans, not knowing that they had cancer or not, that it was terminal or not. And this scan was going to make it real for them. And I hadn't anticipated it, but I had to go out of the room and I just went off to a quiet corridor, sat on the floor and wept. And in a way, I think that one of the big things about intimacy coordinators at the moment, and you hit the nail on the head earlier, was we don't know fully when it's needed and what intimacy really is as a defined word. Because I would argue that the movie we just made had a great many intimate moments. We were fortunate enough, because I come from theater, I believe in rehearsal. We had 5-6 days worth of rehearsal before the movie. And so we were able to have lots of conversations around this. And I actually think the inclusion of a qualified intimacy coordinator who was about opening up opportunities could have added to that movie.
And we wouldn't have
could have added opportunities. Go for it, Amy.
We wouldn't have had to scramble in the moment to be able to recognize the impact that the scene was about to have on all of the people. We did at that moment the best we knew how and offered all sorts of a variety of different opportunities for people dealing with this. But I think this circles full back to what is the definition of intimacy. And after that film, I think Richard and I have a very different view of when and how and why we would bring an intimacy coordinator in, or at least call a coordinator in the beginning to see if this was something that they thought was important. And I think knowing what we know now, we would have had somebody available for that shoot for sure.
Yeah, that's something, you know, as I'm breaking down scripts, I definitely bullet point and earmark some of those areas. Maybe there's not sexual nudity or
right.
or sexual. All the time. Yeah, but there's intimacy or something that could be trauma related for cast or crew that just needs to be highlighted, just bringing it to your attention that this is something you might want to think about as you move forward. And, you know, I
safety
just,
net.
Exactly. Just a consideration in filmmaking about the content of what we're doing. And I think that's a big piece of what intimacy coordinating, as well as being an advocate for actors and crew on set, is also setting up a space of just thoughtfulness and safety for all of those that are involved. So there's so much we could continue to talk about. Is there anything that we missed that you want to share about intimacy coordinating? Any questions you have that you're like, okay, why does this happen? Or
I have a question. Understanding that Filmmakers Ranch is here in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. Understanding that while this city is a very progressive city, we work with people of every religion, on every aspect of the political spectrum. You never, fortunately, our crews, in, at least the crews I've worked on, are very professional in that it doesn't come out on set. We love each other. We love each other, whether you're whoever you voted for. There's still this, when we come together, this has been my experience. That also being said, quite frankly, I didn't think about the response that a lot of my people I would consider close friends had about Saltburn. Not only do we have Filmmakers Ranch, but we also have the Film Crew Institute, which is trying to help raise an emerging industry. My question for you, when we share this with all of our students and people in the industry, how do they get involved in this? Is there room for people? How would somebody in Oklahoma, for instance, be able to start grooming a career to support their fellow crew and actors in what is mostly a conservative state here in Oklahoma? How would somebody train or get into this field of the film business? Because as we all discussed today, intimacy may not always just be sex. We may find the definitions is much larger. And we are going to, as we're growing and emerging, we're going to need to have also, I believe, local intimacy coordinators here who understand this environment, which is quite different than the coast environments.
Yeah.
And I think having, how would somebody go about this? Are you guys offering courses? Are there places for them to find out more information?
I'm glad you asked. So we are actually, one of the things we talked about on this podcast is this podcast is not affiliated with any specific training program. I know Annie and I, we belong to one like intimacy coordinator group. Rachel belongs to a different one. There are training programs that do offer sort of classes that are aimed at like getting you certified. They are mostly like Zoom and online, because I know IPA at least is very dedicated to trying to build like intimacy coordinators across the world. So there is actually an intimacy coordinator who's not in Oklahoma, but I believe Mazella lives in Texas, I think a couple of hours from the border. I think she's the closest one I know of. I think intimacy coordinator classes are quite expensive. So I think it's unfortunately a very big investment if the jobs aren't there yet. So I think there's a lot of room for this industry to grow in how we train intimacy coordinators and how we help local film communities build intimacy coordinating on like a local level.
Because we suffer from some small budgets as well. So if they're going to put money into driving or flying somebody up from Dallas, they may not have the funds for 5 weeks to afford to put them in there. So they would push that aside and buy more food. Yeah.
In terms of us, you know, we haven't really navigated like creating any space yet, Amy, that, you know, we've in general discussed creating. Maybe there's a workshop we could come in and share and teach and create for a film environment such as yours, which would give a general overview of what we do and how we go about it and avenues in which to explore going further, which might be more palatable for the space you're in right now.
And I think the other question leads to somebody, Annie, you come from a background with wardrobe. A dancer background might be another great avenue. Psychologists, so there are, again, it's like, it's not a direct line to become an intimacy coordinator. There are a lot of different avenues that you would hope people have that experience. Maybe you're not a 19-year-old jumping onto the set, right? Maybe there is a life experience that allows you to have the capacity to support such a large. I think that's really what I was hoping. I hope the people who are listening to this and really interested in learning how to get into this, especially here in an emerging market, understand that there's no real clear cut. Am I making that up?
Correct.
It comes from a lot of different ways and a lot of life experience.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we have found is emotional intelligence is key to this role, mm-hmm. as is being able to have production experience.
Yes.
Not having production experience, not understanding being on a set and how the film, the lines of communication work and where to gather information and how to behave or where your role is on set, it are essential to this role.
I will say, I do think training is very important, because I think there's a lot of boring, important parts of this job where you deal with a lot of legal and a lot of paperwork and making sure that you got like there's actually like federal and state and also SAG rules that you have to follow. So it is a thing, like there is a little, I think sometimes people think they can jump in and just be like empathetic and like hold a space for consent. And that is really important. And I think that's often what actors and crew see. But it is, I think it is very important a person has like a pretty strong knowledge in this, like the very start of this job to the very end. Because, you know, it's super important to like hold space for someone, but it is kind of useless in the long run if then you can't actually use what you've shot, because it like goes against, you know, any kind of law, or because you have like not actually like fulfilled the nudity rider correctly. Like you have to, there's a lot of like actual boring legality to our job that does require a certain amount of expertise.
And so therefore, somebody who wants to get in it shouldn't just jump on a set. We have,
unfortunately,
shouldn't just jump in and get their hands dirty.
Yeah.
And,
I think, unfortunately, you can cause a lot of damage through well-meaning enthusiasm.
That's what I think is, I appreciate that. Thank you. That's one of the pieces I was hoping.
One thing I want to be completely upfront with is I think we don't have an answer, like a good answer yet to what to do with emerging markets. Like you guys need qualified people who can work in the budgets that are there. And there isn't the support yet to make that happen. And I think that's like a really important thing for us as an intimacy coordinator community to be working on providing.
Hey, well, you got a studio. Come on out. We got wide opportunity. The two of us come together. We can change the world.
That's
we can change the world.
That's
I just want to also acknowledge you guys for this podcast, because there is a little bit of a concern that I had when I heard about intimacy coordinators that it was going to be a no and shutting down role, right? It's going to be a gatekeeper. And I think the more that I have chatted with you all offline, because we've chatted around this for a number of months, what I began to realize is that actually done right, and I think that's the key, is working with the right intimacy coordinator. What this is actually about is opening up to true intimacy and the value of intimacy and what that means, and making sure that everyone is bought into it so that actually we can create more authentic product. And that for me is what has me enormously excited and makes me realize that this isn't just a role that you get someone to break down the script and they come in for one day. I think this really starts with screenwriters, and this starts with early stage development with writers. And the value of this for the actor, for the director, for the producer, for the writer, for all the crew members, if we can create a safe, intimate space to work, amazing artistic works can come out of it. But that's going to take time and investment. And quite frankly, everyone's going to have to look at themselves a little bit to be honest with what does intimacy mean to them. So I just want to acknowledge you guys and say thank you for putting this podcast together. I can't wait to listen to more episodes.
Mm, brilliant. Thank you guys so much. We really, really appreciate your presence, and we look forward to having you come back.
Yay. Well, you know what? Here's a challenge. Next one, we're going to do live at Filmmakers Ranch. We will invite a whole plethora of emerging market crew and filmmakers. We'll sit you guys up there and we'll do a live podcast on you name it. We'll make it happen.
Beautiful.
It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Can't wait.
Thank you for listening. Thank you so much for your time.
Any social medias, places people can find you, follow you, look at your work?
Well, I think the best place to go is www.filmmakersranch.com. And there you can see the whole world that we're creating. And we're inviting people who want to work outside of the system, really, to have a safe, great considering this podcast, place to explore being artists. And so go and check out the website. It has everything there. And then follow us on social media and sign up to that newsletter so we can keep you informed of all the fantastic developments and how anyone can get involved with what we're doing out here in slap bang in the middle of America.
Amazing.
Cool.
Thank you guys.
No, it was our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for listening. You can find us on all social media platforms at Romancing the Screen Pod, or email us at romancingthescreenpod@gmail.com. That's a cut.